You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Now let's move on to the latter half of this edition of BOA Audio as we welcome ADC experiencer Dr. Annie Kagan, who is going to talk about being contacted by her late brother, who in turn prompted her to write the book The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, which chronicled her experience and his story. Annie is going to reflect on the very first moment that her brother contacted her from beyond the grave, as well as reveal the logistics of this communication. She'll muse about the challenges she faced upon receiving these communications and how she wrestled with how to share them with others and what they may mean for her. We'll also discuss how her story is an incredibly unique experience in the pantheon of ADC cases, and insights into the afterlife which were imparted to Annie by her late brother. Altogether, folks, this is a remarkable story unlike anything we have explored on the program before. And in light of that, please allow me to give you a little bit of background on Dr. Annie Kagan. Annie Kagan began writing songs at the age of 14. At 15, she was signed by a producer from Columbia Records. At 16, she was performing in New York City cafes and clubs. After 10 years as a songwriter and performer, Annie returned to college, graduating with honors, and became a doctor of chiropractics, with a successful private practice on Manhattan's Upper East Side. Addicted to Eastern spiritual traditions, Annie studied yoga and pursued an intense meditation practice. Following her inner voice, she left her career as a doctor and abandoned her hectic city life in search of serenity in a small house by the bay on the tip of Long Island. When her brother Billy died unexpectedly and began speaking to her from the afterlife, her future took a surprising turn. She has masterfully combined her talents as a lyricist, performer, and healer in order to touch the lives of others with Billy's communications from the other side in her debut book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Her website is www.theafterlifeofbillyfingers.com. Pretty simple, all one word, theafterlifeofbillyfingers.com. Check it out. And with that said, let's get down to business, my friends, and rock and roll. This interview was also recorded on October 18th, 2013. Dr. Annie Kagan, talking about The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, on BOA Audio, Season 8. Ladies and gentlemen, we continue onward here with our discussion on after-death communications, ADCs, and with a real emphasis on the C part in that, the communication, because our guest now is Dr. Annie Kagan. She's the author of the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. It's a fascinating story. It's a remarkable experience. And as I said, we're really going to focus on the communication aspect of it. You just heard from Bill Guggenheim looking at the phenomena as a whole. Now we're going to really hone in on one specific and really amazing story of after-death communication. And it is told, as I said, in the riveting story, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Dr. Annie Kagan, welcome to BOA Audio. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
Now, we generally start out just to get you people up to speed, you know, give me the bio, the background. Who is Dr. Annie Kagan? And, you know, it's kind of funny. Some folks, it's, you know, how did you get interested in UFOs or how did you get interested in Bigfoot? You kind of had this story thrust upon you, you know. So I guess tell us a little bit about you personally and then
right.
How this began.
That's a good way to put it. Thrust upon me was kind of how it felt. Well, I was living in New York City. I was a chiropractor. And after many years, maybe being in practice after 8 years, I began to find being a doctor quite stressful. I've always been a very empathetic person. And I started to feel the pain of my patients a little bit too much. So I wanted to remedy the situation, and I looked around, and actually a wonderful meditation technique kind of found me. And to my amazement, I began meditating several hours a day, really.
Wow. But
instead of making my practice easier, my chiropractic practice, I actually became hypersensitive from the meditation, and now I even felt more when I was going to work, and it became harder.
Oh.
And I started to like get headaches at work, and at the same time, New York City, which is where I always lived, became really overwhelming for me because I was so sensitive, the noise, the peace, and I just decided that I needed to move.
Yeah.
And I sold my practice, I sold what I had, and I bought a really small house by the bay on Long Island, and then I went back to writing music, which is something I had done as a kid and into my early 20s. Then my brother died unexpectedly, and actually 3 weeks later he began speaking to me from the afterlife, asking me to write it all down, and I became an author.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell you kind of caught yourself as you were sort of recounting it. It's like you almost have to, people need to open their minds to this, that this happened. You know, it's kind of like, it's an amazing thing even to say, I'm sure, what happened to you. So, I guess.
It is.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, and also I guess when, I want to encourage people because of course when all of this was happening to me, it didn't feel like a happy thing. It felt like things were kind of falling apart. But then they kind of reconstructed themselves. So I guess, you know, I'm trying to say, wow, you know, sometimes your life just takes you to places that are completely unexpected.
Mm.
And hopefully it all turns out for the good, like it did with me.
Exactly. Okay, so I suppose instead of really, I would ask you for a thumbnail on the afterlife of Billy Fingers, but we're really going to sort of dig into your story in and of itself. I don't want you to have to tell the whole story here at the very beginning. So I guess take us to the first moment when this all began, when you first heard the communication and what it was, to get people sort of up to speed with the story.
Yes. My brother was actually hit by a car and killed unexpectedly, and I was very, very grief-stricken, could barely get out of bed, could barely function, and then 3 weeks after he died, it was sunrise, and I was kind of in that half-awake, half-dreaming state, and I heard his voice really clearly outside of my head, as if there was kind of like a little hole in the ceiling, and he was talking to me, and he's like, Annie, it's me, it's Billy, get up, it's me, it's really me. And at first I thought, oh, I'm having a dream. And I think I said out loud, maybe just in my mind, oh, Billy, you're dead, you know, you can't be here. And he's like, no, it's really me, get up and go get a notebook. And I open my eyes and I'm walking across the floor and I'm realizing I'm not asleep, I'm awake. And he's still talking to me. And he starts describing this phenomenally beautiful dimension that he's in, where everything is love and kindness and light, and he's being protected by invisible higher beings. And as he's speaking to me, the atmosphere of his world is kind of just flowing right into me. And instead of grief-stricken, I'm feeling pretty euphoric. And then he, you know, promised that death wasn't as serious as we all think it is, that it's couldn't be better, as he would say, and that we would meet again. And that was the beginning of this very unexpected, strange adventure.
Exactly, yeah. It's unexpected, definitely, is the word. It's strange, for sure. It's, I'm sure at first you must have been, I mean, how long, I guess this is a good way to put it, because if it happened to me, I don't know how long it would take me to actually sort of wrap my mind around it. I'm sure there was kind of a struggle within you where you were like, maybe I'm just depressed, maybe this, maybe that, maybe I'm sick, maybe, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, while, the thing is, Tim, while it's happening, the energy's so good, and you're not really in your mind. You're in, like, a more cosmic part of yourself.
Right, right. It sounds like there's something going on. Yeah.
And so while it's going on, you're not really questioning it. Mm. But then later, when he leaves and the energy gets more normal, you say, oh, come on. I'm just somehow, I don't know how, but I'm making this up so I could feel better about his death. And then I'm like, you know, next time if he comes again, I'm going to be really scientific. I'm going to not flow away in the energy. I'm going to keep this book near me. You know, it's like very, very, very determined to, you know, kind of be scientific about it. And the subtitle of the book is How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. So one of the important things that happened along with his, shall we say, taking me on a tour of the afterlife is he gave me what your guest Bill Guggenheim calls evidentiary after death communications, which means he gave me information that I couldn't possibly know that proved to be true time after time. Things about my friends I didn't know, things about people I would meet I didn't know. Mm. And really, those were the things that convinced me that I wasn't imagining it.
Yeah, that makes sense. For the quasi-skeptical listener in the audience, give me an example of this proof that you know, you think proved this to be solid.
Right.
You know, because you hear the people listening who are like, well, she didn't say anything, so, you know.
Right.
So let's let them get their piece of the pie.
Well, I'll give you a funny little one.
Okay.
You know, and they escalated, and I don't want to spoil the book.
Cause absolutely not. Yeah, we don't want to spoil it.
You know, the book's kind of a thriller. So,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You know, you never know what's happening next. But, like, one of the early ones, I had a friend called Tex. First of all, I hardly told anybody that my brother was talking to me. It was a big, big, big secret.
Mm-hmm.
But I told a few people, and my friend Tex was one of them. So I'm making lunch one day, I'm in the kitchen, and all of a sudden I hear Billy talking to me from the ceiling, and he goes, call Tex and tell her, show me the money. And I'm like, what? What is this? That's like ridiculous. And you know, you have to understand, he's my brother, so it's not like he's some high spirit that I'm afraid of, you know, so I would argue with him, and I'd be like, you know, that's too stupid. And he'd go, no, call her right now. So Tex has a good sense of humor. I called her, and I said, I know this sounds really crazy, but Billy says, show me the money. Does that mean anything to you? And she starts laughing. She goes, oh, my God. I'm like, what? What? And she said, well, this morning, because she knew about Billy, when she took her dog for a walk, she went by the water, and she was looking up at the sky, and she said, okay, Billy, if you're real, give me a sign. And she's a writer, so she came home, and she took a shower, and she told me she had been thinking about her screenplay after she got out of the shower, and she was kind of dancing around in the mirror, like the scene from Jerry Maguire, and going, show me the money, show me the money, show me the money. And then, and then she gets out, and I call her, and I say, show me the money. So, you know, she took that as a sign that she asked for. I mean, how could I possibly know that?
Right, right.
You know, so it was, and he did it in really funny little clue ways. Like he'd, you know, he'd tell me something that I had no idea what it meant, and he'd send me to somebody, and then they'd go, oh, this is what it means. Like another one with Tex was he mentioned a name to me that I didn't know. I'm like, well, who is Patty Malone? And it turns out it was her great-grandfather. So, you know, I had never been psychic before, And all of those things, just kind of every time it happened, I would get like a chill.
Yeah.
And I would feel like, oh my God, this is real. My brother is really talking to me from another dimension. So, you know, even you talk about skeptics, but while I was going through the whole experience, I was skeptical myself.
Right, right. Exactly, yeah. I can totally see that, because I would be the same way. Even as you're going through it, you're like, this. Every time something even more unbelievable happens, your mind gets even further blown. It's now, did he... clearly, like, there, we talked with Bill, you know, it's kind of, part of the idea is sort of like the people on the other side, they want to let you know they're okay, that they've passed on and everything. But it seems like there was a greater mission here, you know, behind what Billy's doing, because beyond the first, he could have just come back and been like, hey, I'm fine, thanks for everything.
Yeah.
You know, in your life. But he had a mission involved, right?
Yes, and I don't think that this will spoil it, but he did send me on kind of a treasure hunt for different things. And one of the things that he led me to was these journals that he wrote, like, in the last years of his life. And my mind was completely blown to see that he wrote that he really wanted to write a book that would help people spiritually.
Hmm.
And the fact that he did it after he died was really quite amazing. And some of the things that he wrote in the journal that I had never seen were things that he was telling me now.
Yeah.
Like certain phrases. So, I think, you know, it's funny because the book's pretty popular and I get letters all the time and we have like a really active Facebook page and a lot of people feel like Billy is kind of around them when they're reading the book and they have like different spiritual experiences and they feel him because in a way he's not the typical, he's not the typical person you would expect to really be giving you an expanded spiritual vision because, you know, I call him my bad boy brother because he did have a lot of problems during his life on Earth. He had addiction problems. He was not somebody who was really great at life. He wasn't, you know, super successful at something. He was just a very loving, intelligent person who had difficulties, and I think that a lot of the things that he says are help other people who have difficulties. He's not, you know, painting life on Earth as just this very rosy thing that's easy.
Right, right. Yeah, I noticed that in the book. He was trying to kind of explain to you that you have to go through these difficult times. That's the whole point of being here, is to sort of get through this stuff.
Yes, and also I think for me, because he was the bad boy and I was kind of the good girl, it was very important to kind of accept the shadow part of life, which is something, I'm the kind of person who would always wait for everything to be perfect before I could be happy.
Yeah.
And he's kind of taught me, no, you know, you could enjoy yourself anyway. It's like, that's the nature of life on Earth. It doesn't mean that you've done something wrong or you're being punished. It's just life is, you know, it's all kinds of shades and colors and experience, and you can live them all.
Exactly, yeah, absolutely. Now, what's really interesting about this story in this case, I guess we could call it if we're going to get kind of scientific about it, is that...
Yeah.
You know, we have an instance, you hear these stories about the near-death experiences, and the people always come back. I think Billy mentioned in the book, I guess since you transcribed what he said, I guess he did say it. I tripped myself up there, but he kind of mentioned in the book, you know, those people have a round-trip ticket, and it seems like he had just the one-way trip. So that's a really unique and invaluable perspective. You know, and again, I don't want you to give away the contents of the book, but tell us, through millennia now, people have wondered what happens when you die, and this is a pretty good indicator of what may happen when you die. So let's fill them in a little bit on that.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I really love is, you know, that the after-death communication begins where the near-death experience ends, but they really, really support each other. Mm-hmm. One of the main differences is that people who have near-death experiences are remembering their experiences now that they're back on the other side, so they kind of are experiencing it through their own belief filters and that kind of thing. Billy, if you can, you know, wrap your mind around it, if you read the book and you could see that the proofs are, you know, pretty amazing, and if you could, like, help, let that help you suspend judgment, he's there. He's not remembering it. He's in the moment, and he's reporting in great detail.
Right.
What's happening to him. Now, the really interesting thing that I love, because Dr. Raymond Moody wrote the foreword to my book, and he's the one who actually coined the near-death experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he told me that today, in this day and age, because there are so many medical ways of reviving people, that the near-death experience is very, very popular. But in ancient times, like the ancient Greeks were very, very into visiting the other side and bringing back information. And most of the beliefs really came from after-death communications in those days, not so much near-death experiences. And if you look across all cultures, through all time, there was always a belief in the afterlife. And it is now seen that a lot of those beliefs came because it's actually quite natural to have these experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right on there. That's kind of what Bill and I were talking about, too. It's this thing is far more normal than paranormal, and it seems, you know, these after-death communications are becoming more and more generally accepted as you can't really put your finger on it. You can't kind of, like, put it in a box, but you kind of have a feeling that it's just something that happens.
Well, that's one of the things I'd like to encourage people, because it's something that you sense. Of course, Billy was writing the book for a larger audience, but let's take the example of my friend who's a doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, and people talk to me now. They tell me all kinds of stories now that I wrote the book that they never told me before.
Oh, yeah. You know? We'll get into some of those.
So, you know, he said to me that he'll go outside when he's having a hard day and he'll see a butterfly. You know, the orange and black, beautiful monarch butterflies. And he said he just knows it's a messenger from his father. He doesn't know why he knows. The butterfly, of course, doesn't talk to him. But he feels it. He knows it. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is my dad, or my dad's messenger. That's what I believe. And he feels better. And people feel these things. They have these intuitive hits that, oh, my God, you know, that little bird, it has something to do with my mother.
Right.
And, you know, but then it's so easy to really talk yourself out of it. Like, oh, you know, why would I think that? But I think if you open up and let yourself go with the experience, you'll have more experiences.
Mm, yeah. Got to open yourself up to it. Otherwise, I'm chuckling. We were talking about this with the sort of the idea that you need to, if you hear a voice, the idea of the stories about people who hear, you know, advice in instances which avert a crisis, you know, like you stop your car or else you might get hit by a car, you know, that kind of thing. And it's the people who don't listen to that are the ones we don't have the stories from because they don't make it.
Yes, it's true. I heard a story from someone I know who never mentioned it to me before, and then he read my book, and he said, you know, he used to live in Puerto Rico, and his mother died when he was very young, and he never knew his father, and he was growing up in kind of like a gang world, and it was kind of dangerous. And one day, he was going to go into a house, and he heard his mother's voice say, "Don't go into that house." And he was surprised, and but he listened to it, and people in that house got killed.
Oh, boy.
And it changed his whole life. He started to live a whole different kind of life. So, yeah, it's good to listen to those messages that we sometimes people hear it in their head, sometimes they feel it in their heart. You know, it's different for everybody.
Hmm. Now, looking at the logistics of all this, were you the only one who heard from Billy? Because I know you mentioned in the book that your ex-husband was really tight with him and kept up with him right up until he died. I mean, did he ever get any sort of messages, or did any other people hear from him at all? Was it just a communication to you?
Only through me. But other people have felt his presence and felt his help. I had a girlfriend who was going through a very difficult legal battle, and she had to testify in court. And she was really, really scared. And he said, you know, tell her I'll be there. And she said, well, you know, when she got in the witness position, because it's not really a stand, she really felt him, like, behind her, and she wasn't afraid at all. So people have kind of felt him really strongly, but not heard him.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to kind of purposely avoid the overall narrative of the book so we don't give away too much. So,
no, it's okay. You can ask whatever you want. I just won't answer.
There you go. There you go.
You know, I want the audience to understand that it's only because we don't want to spoil it.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah, there's no...
Because there's so many surprising things.
Exactly.
You know, because for me, it was like a mystery. It was like is he real? Does the soul exist? You know, is this all, you know, what's going on? And so I wanted to create the book in such a way so that the reader also went along with me on this mysterious journey.
Hmm. Did the communication change over time? Did he intimate that, you know, his time was limited, that this was a window of opportunity that he had to take advantage of? You know, detail that a little bit.
Okay, well, at first I heard him outside of my head very clearly. And then, you know, there would be times like, and then he would go away for a while and I thought he was gone. Hmm. But then he would like reappear. So then he would appear in the morning, like I would see like an orb of light on my ceiling, and I would really, really focus on it, and then I could only hear him. But then when I heard him, and this is a very hard thing to describe, it was almost like silently I heard him. It's like I tuned in to, like, I turned on a radio, I turned on a station, and then I could hear him. And then there were times, very few times, but there were times I could see him as well.
Oh, wow.
And those are times he was just really kind of like joking around with me. Making fun of me, because you have to understand, like, in my spiritual practice, in my spiritual path, one of the main rules is you never talk about your spiritual experiences.
Right.
You never talk about what happens to you in meditation. It's all very private. So then my bad boy brother shows up, and he's like, well, I'm telling you all this stuff, and I want you to put it in a book. And I'm like, no, that's not really what I've been taught that I'm supposed to do. So there was this constant struggle of me being really afraid and him kind of making fun of me and saying, you know, this is not all so serious. So there was, you know, so he would fool around with me a lot. Like one time, the first time I ever saw him, he was like being a bad boy angel. So, I mean, the way I saw him was very, very transparent. and kind of like wavy, but he had like, you know, a book in his hands, and he had like a crooked halo on his head, and he was making like faces, like imitating an angel, which is just this kind of thing he would do when he was alive, like, you know, make fun of things and over exaggerate, and it was his way of saying, oh, come on, you know, lighten up. Yeah. That's one of his biggest messages, is lighten up.
Now, did you experience any, now you said that, you know, you tried to keep this kind of under wraps, but did you experience any blowback from people who just couldn't handle this experience that you were having?
You know, it's strange, but I really didn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, I didn't tell a lot of people. That was, you know, one way I controlled it. And, I mean, sometimes now I get it, but very rarely.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people get angry because I think that the people that get the most angry, and there's only been a couple, is because they don't understand why they don't get, you know, like why it happened to me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, why is this happening to you? I don't believe her, you know, she's making this up or something like that. And, you know, it's kind of like I want to say, well, you don't understand, like, how hard this was. Like, you know, the book is kind of easy breezy because it's a book and I wanted people to enjoy it. But, you know, you have to go into isolation. You have to meditate 3 hours a day. You have to give up seeing people. Like, you know, there were a lot of difficult requirements that I had to do. So, you know, I guess if most people did something like that, then they would have this kind of trip, but it wasn't an easy thing, and it wasn't something that, you know, and you had to be like really isolated, because my house is really isolated in the woods. I never could have had this happen to me in the city.
Why do you think that's the case? I'm confused, because it seems like you're at the mercy and the whim of Billy anyway. Why did it require all this meditation?
Well, I did all this meditation beforehand. Like, one of the things that he talks about is that everybody has, like, a book of life, mm-hmm. with a blueprint of their life. There's a lot of freedom inside the blueprint, but there's a blueprint of their life. And I feel like, you know, everything led me to this little house where I was going to be alone so that I could hear him. It's almost like the forces or my destiny set it up, because I could never have done this in the city. I could never have done it, you know, like I had gotten separated from my husband. I couldn't have done it with somebody else around all the time. It was a very specific set of circumstances that made this available to me.
Okay. All right.
And yes, I was at the whim of Billy, for sure. that's another thing people will say, like, well, why didn't you ask him questions, you know? Why didn't you? And I think I said somewhere in the book, because, like, he would never answer my questions. He was definitely in charge of this, and that was kind of fine with me, because when he was alive, I was always in charge of everything with him. So now he was in charge, and I just kind of surrendered to it.
Mm. Yeah, and what kind of questions would you really ask anyway? I mean, I don't really...
Oh, I don't know. They keep... I don't know. What would
lottery
I...
numbers?
Oh, I know, like personal questions. Oh, like people want to know, like, why I didn't ask him what's the lotto number.
Right. Yeah.
Or, you know, or something about my life, like, oh, don't you ask him, like, what should I do? Should I do this or that? Well, actually, he would never answer those questions because, you know, we all have to kind of figure things out for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just thinking. Yeah. Why would the whole kind of point of a lot of this is that you're on your own journey, so it wouldn't make, you know, any sense for him to interfere with that.
That's perfectly said. Yes, he was not, you know, I think one of the beautiful things for me is that his message is extremely empowering. Like, don't listen to this one, don't listen to that one, learn to see life through your own eyes and decide everything for yourself. Because there's a lot of illusion in the world, and there are a lot of false teachers in the world, and the one thing that we do have is our own consciousness and our own discernment. So that was a big lesson. So therefore, he's not going to tell me what to do.
Not anymore, right?
No. Well, he'll tell me what to do, but it doesn't, you know, it kind of more serves his purposes than mine.
Now, how has the, I guess, let me try and help me wrap my mind around the timeline of all this. How long ago did this all begin? How long did it last? Is it still going on today?
Yeah, it began in 2005. It is still going on today, but I've taken a little bit of a sabbatical starting, I think, in about mid-August. Like, I've asked him to just give me a little space.
Mm-hmm. Why is that, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah.
You do, okay.
You know, I'm just trying to, of an honest answer. Like, you know, the book came out in March.
It's kind of become your whole life, and you need
and
to sort
it's
of,
become, yeah, yeah, like everything. And, you know, people are asking me, is there going to be another book? And, like, I don't know what's going to happen next, but I feel like, you know, he taught me that I should do what I want. So in a way, I'm trying to see what I really, really want, because sometimes people ask me questions and I feel kind of strange answering them because, you know, he's just Billy. He's like, I mean, I believe everything that he says, but he's just Billy, and I feel like, I'm in this funny position of answering these age-old questions.
I see exactly what you mean, yeah. It's like, and you only have the one witness.
Right, and I don't feel comfortable, you know, kind of, I used to do it more, like, oh, you know, like, well, this would mean that, or just deep questions about the meaning of life or this and that. And I just, like, try to stick to the material and also just say, well, Billy says this. This is what Billy says. Because I'm, you know, I don't feel like the ultimate authority, and I just want to be honest about that.
Mm. Okay. So you've kind of just asked him to take a little break for a while. But it's, like I earlier alluded to sort of the idea of, like, that there was a limited time window, but it sounds like that he can, that he hasn't, that there's no limitations, let's say, on what he can do as far as communicating to you.
No, there aren't. And I'm just, you know, taking a break because I'm not sure where it's all going, or, you know, for me, this book is enough for a while. like there's so much in it, you know, I'm not like rushing to like go into another period of solitude, or I just don't know.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. You said earlier that, you know, people who have read the book, they feel like there's this presence around them. You know, what's been the, just oh, beyond that, what's been the overall reaction from folks who've checked out the book and read it and stuff?
Well, that's kind of the nicest thing for me, because I'm always getting letters and the Facebook Afterlife of Billy Fingers page. Like, people are very uplifted from the book and from the experience, and they feel like they really resonate deeply with the messages and what he says in the book. And it's almost like they've always felt these things, but they haven't had words for it. And when the words are put to it, it gives them an experience and a feeling about life that is very, very, very helpful.
Mm. Now, your story is really unique as far as from what I can tell with the ADCs. I mean, a lot of them are kind of more subtle. I mean, this is like about as subtle as a sledgehammer. You know, it's pretty profound communication. Have you heard from other people who've been in similar situations?
No, I haven't. And, you know, Bill Guggenheim wrote that, you know, it may be the most detailed, longest after-death communication ever recorded. But I think this kind of thing used to happen in the ancient Greek times. Mm. And I'm not really sure why it's happened, except I really think that Billy, when he was alive, he lived so many different lives. He had money, he was homeless, he was loved, he was in dark spaces, you know, he lived in a $1 million condo in New York, he was in jail. I mean, it was like he lived so many lifetimes in one lifetime. And I think somehow, and also, he loved helping people. I mean, that was his favorite thing in life. He just, people loved him and he loved people and he really, really genuinely wanted to help. And somehow something was set up so that we were fated to do this. I mean, why did I suddenly find a meditation teacher and, you know, go from someone who had lunch with the girls to someone who, you know, just meditated 3 hours a day? It's a pretty strange story.
Yeah.
And so I just think that there was some window opening, and there are so many books now about near-death experiences and after-death communications, and I really believe that in a way we're part of a movement, and I think that now that the baby boomers are getting closer to their own deaths and their parents' deaths, and the baby boomers changed so many things in society that maybe there's going to be a little bit of a revolution about what death really is, and that it's not something to be so feared, and that actually it's a doorway to a great adventure. And I think that that would really help us have better lives as well as better deaths.
Yeah, healthier lives, I think, in a mental way, you know, sort of a give people a better peace of mind, because there's such an overarching, overriding, unending fear of death. It permeates the culture.
It does, and my mother died after Billy died, and because of my experience with Billy, I was able to have a much more open and beautiful, along with the sadness, experience of her death. And I think if, you know, it's so hard to like lose somebody that you love so dearly. But if you know that in a way the love goes on. And also, like, what does it mean? Like, if I could have this communication, and I know Bill talks in his book about so many people having these kind of communications. What does it mean? It actually means that we're divine, eternal beings, even now. So when you have that change of mind that you're a cosmic being in a body, then it really enriches your life in a way that I think nothing else can.
It gives you the idea that this isn't all that there is, which is a nice feeling, especially when you're going through some tough times.
It is a nice feeling, especially when you're going through tough times. And not to just identify, I think one of the things Billy always says is, you know, see beyond the circumstances that you're in, because really you're bigger than the circumstances, because actually every cell in your body was formed on a star. I mean, literally. And when you connect with that fact, that's something I found out, you know, through the book that Carl Sagan used to say. When you feel yourself as part of the cosmos, you kind of connect with the amazing miracle of being alive. Like, one of the things, you know, in the book, Billy has many different kinds of life reviews. I forget if it's three or four, but one of them, he says, you know, it's not about what he did. It's about just the miracle of being alive, of just being in a body and breathing and being able to hear and see, like, we lose touch with the miracle that's life because we're so caught up in, you know, our problems or what we are accomplishing or, you know, are we valuable? Are we valuable in the eyes of, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry, you know?
Yeah.
And you just brought back to that just miracle of your breath, of your life.
I see exactly what you're saying, you know. It's kind of like you got to realize you don't have it so bad. Sometimes you see somebody that has it worse, and that's when it really drives home. But you really need to have that perspective more often than not without being prompted by the unfortunate circumstances of others.
That's very true. You know, and that's the other thing. Like, you know, he's so realistic. Like, he says, you know, when the hard parts come, you don't have to like it. You don't have to pretend and say, oh, I'm so glad that this hard thing is happening. That, you know, being part of being human is, of course, you're going to prefer pleasure over pain. That's part of the plan. But then he'll say to me, this isn't in the book, but that when you're going through, sometimes if I'm going through something that's really hard, he'll go, oh, yeah, you're not doing simple math now. Now you're doing calculus.
Hmm.
Because we really reap a lot from our difficulties often, because difficulties can make you grow, because you have to kind of jump a level to deal with them. So, you know, he'll remind me, oh, you know, so now you're doing calculus. Now you've got, you know, something really complicated, something that you're afraid of, or something that, you know, you have to really draw on your resources. It's about change and growth. And that's the interesting thing about the afterlife, too, that I learned. Like, somehow my vision was always that it was going to be kind of a place you just get to and you're there. But there's a lot of change and growth in the afterlife, even more than there is on this dimension. So, you know, that's quite surprising. So, you know, change and growth is something, even though it's difficult and sometimes painful, I just say, okay, calculus.
Yeah. Can you elaborate a little bit on that change and growth that happens in the afterlife? And also, the one thing you said that stood out was you said Billy had three or four life reviews. And when you hear the near-death experiences, obviously you only hear the one. Did he ever intimate or explain why he had subsequent life reviews?
Right, because the things that he's talking about is a much deeper level than near-death experience. The person's coming back, but he's not coming back. And I think one of the major differences here is that a lot of times people who have near-death experiences say when they do their life review that they feel like pain at some of the things that they've done or some of the things that they've caused people.
Right.
But Billy says, like, in his first life review, which is like a similar kind of life review where you actually, you know, see a movie of your life, he said that he sees it in a very detached, Buddha-like way with no judgment at all. And I think one of the differences, too, is where he is, the depth of where he is so loving, because you're surrounded by the love of these higher beings, that there isn't pain on that level. Like, there's no more pain anymore where he is. So therefore, you can't really feel the pain. You can learn, you can look at, but it's not a painful thing.
Hmm. Interesting. Like physically painful or emotionally? I guess both, right?
I guess emotionally, like when people are talking about near-death experiences and life review, they say, you know, they feel bad or they feel the pain that they caused anybody. But Billy says, no, it's all fascinating. He's seeing things. He's learning things. But it's kind of a little bit detached. And then he goes on and he looks at his book of life with another being. Like, one of the things I would say that, you know, being in the afterlife and not coming back is kind of an evolutionary journey towards becoming a higher being yourself.
That's what I was going to ask you, because it's like you almost get wrapped up into, like, I don't know if you know the old expression, like turtles all the way down. Like, if, when you die, if you go to the afterlife, are we going to be sitting around in the afterlife going, what do you think happens next?
Yeah, not at all. I mean, it was very active. He met a guide. He met, I don't want to spoil it, but,
okay.
But, you know, he goes through a lot of different experiences. There are times he is very, very still and kind of in a place of bliss. But then it's like when he's in these still blissful places, he's kind of absorbing this higher unconditional love and these qualities of the divine, and then he incorporates them into himself, and then he's still himself, but he's evolved. That was another surprise, was that I think my concept was you die and you become part of like a pool of bliss.
Yeah, I've heard that idea.
Right, you lose your identity, but he seemed to keep his identity, but the higher parts of his identity. That's what I would say.
Okay. Now, one of the other ideas, I guess, you know, and it's a very simplistic sort of idea that people have when you die, is that you go and you're with all of the loved ones and your friends and your family that passed away. Did he give any indication sort of what the interaction is like amongst the people beyond, if you will?
Yes. Well, that's one of the things that was surprising, because he, the very, very first level that you go to in the afterlife is where you meet your relatives. Yes, you meet your pets. You know, it's a place of reunion. But actually, Billy skipped that step, because he was really, when he was alive, he was like very, very secretly, because I really didn't know this except from his journals, he was really, really into the spiritual, and he didn't really care about meeting somebody that much. He was like just going for the bliss, I guess.
Yeah.
But yes, everybody is reunited with their loved ones. But then later on, there's another kind of reunion that's even more intense when you meet in this universal state. So, you know, in the first part, when you just die, like my father was there for him. He went up this thing called a chamber, which is like a birthing canal, and my father was there. And usually people have these reunions on the first level, which is kind of the level of beliefs and ideas. But then later on, there are reunions in a much deeper way, that it's like soul to soul, light to light, very beautiful, really.
Yeah. Okay. That's one of the things, you know, they really want to, I think that keeps a lot of people going. It has to, you know, that you hear that when people die, you know, we'll be reunited on the other side. So it's good that at least.
Well, you absolutely will. But the thing is also, you know, you don't even have to wait till then. Like, it's amazing on Facebook how many people have and how many letters I get of how connected they feel to their loved ones. Who are here, you know, while they're still here, they still have this feeling of love and protection. And yes, you know, I always say, wow, it'd be really great if one day a year your loved ones could come here to this level and you could get a hug. I mean, it's a different kind of thing than being in the body, but also, you know, it's the person's soul that still exists. So it's really the best and most beautiful part of them that you can reach out for. I'll tell you a great example of this. I got a letter from a woman who, her father died when she was in her late 20s. And after he died, she realized that even though he was kind of an army man and not the most affectionate person, that he had really loved her in ways she didn't realize when she was alive, when he was alive. And she used to play a song for him, like, "You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings." Mm-hmm. And she would think of him a lot, and she would play the song, and she would say, "Here, Daddy, this is for you." And then one day she was having a really hard day, and she turned on the radio, and the song came on, "You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings." And she said somehow she knew now, like, she had reached out to him, and now he was reaching back.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's good to reach out. You don't have to have expectations, but, you know, you don't have to wait to get that feeling of being united or that love feeling. You don't have to wait till you pass over, really.
Yeah, I think if you're open to it, chances are it will happen, you know. I've had that experience where I sort of, you know, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to open
go
up.
Go ahead.
No. You don't want to hear this. I'll tell you after the show. But, yeah, you need – I think that people who are open to it, then it happens. And the funny part is I think that it's the people who are dismiss it, as you said earlier, that's kind of where you see the anger from people, you know, who kind of lash out at this idea. It's like if they would just open their minds to it.
Yeah, although I'm not even sure if that's it either because, you know, I get, like, letters like, "They are open, I'm trying so hard." And it is kind of mysterious, like, I don't know why, but I think sometimes people have expectations that it's going to happen in a certain way, and then it happens in another way, and then they miss it.
Right, yeah.
Right? Because you never know, like, how it's going to happen or when it's going to happen or what it's going to be like. But I think a good thing to do is to reach out in some way and pay tribute to that person. I did that with one of my girlfriends. She's like, "Oh, well, I wish I could do it." I said, "Well, why don't you reach out? Why don't you pay tribute and, you know, tell your father how much you love him and this and that?" And then she really started to feel his presence, and it was a very joyful presence. So reach out without expectation of how exactly it's going to be.
Yeah. Don't attach any expectations to it, and chances are you'll get a better result. And don't – I would say, too, for folks who are trying to really kind of open up this thing is, you know, I wouldn't – put too much pressure on yourself or the other or the person on the other side, you know, because it has to kind of happen organically, I think.
I agree. And also, you know, even if you don't have the experience yourself, take joy and pleasure in other people's experience because that means that it's true for you as well. You know, sometimes I think it's just genetic. Like my father used to tell me that he had discussions with his father and mother when they were dead. And I thought he meant like in his head, you know, like, yeah. Oh, my father was, you know, but this also runs in families, I've learned. So, you know, I'm not a great tennis player, but I could do this. So people have different talents and skills. And I think what you said is really good. So, but, you know, take pleasure in other people's experience because it means that it's actually true for you as well.
Exactly. Well, folks can take pleasure in your experience by checking out the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. They can find out more about it at afterlifeofbillyfingers.com. Pretty simple, easy to find. And if you don't want to do all that typing, just punch in anniekagan.com, and that'll bring you to the website as well.
Yeah, and you can get a free chapter there and also visit Facebook, Afterlife of Billy Fingers, because there's a lot of sayings from the book with all kinds of pictures, and it's a really fun site.
Yeah, sounds like a vibrant community over there.
It is.
Sounds good. Beyond, you kind of said you're sort of in flux, let's say, right now, but do you have any – this is the kind of thing that I could see being turned into a film or something like that. Are there any plans – not just that, but I mean, what sort of stuff do you have cooking that you haven't considered at all? Maybe down the line, anything?
Well, since I used to be a musician, I have been thinking of doing kind of a music in the background with some words, new words from Billy, helping people reach a higher level of consciousness. That's okay. Kind of on my list right now, but we'll see.
Yeah, stay tuned, as they
stay
say.
Stay tuned.
Exactly. Once again, folks, definitely want to check out afterlifeofbillyfingers.com is the website. The book is Afterlife of Billy Fingers. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it. Your story is really tremendous, Annie, and I wish we had more time to dig into it, but I want folks to go out and pick up the book and dig into it themselves and really get a feel for this remarkable story. It really is one of a kind and a real tremendous insight, perhaps, into what is going on the other side. As you said, you know, it's just Billy, but still, he's the only Billy we got right now, so we got to take what we can. So, folks, check out The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. And Annie Kagan, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
That does it for this edition of BOA Audio Season 8. Big, big thanks to Dr. Annie Kagan for coming on the show and sharing her remarkable story. You can find out more from her at theafterlifeofbillyfingers.com. Pretty simple, all one word, theafterlifeofbillyfingers.com. Check it out. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback, and we've got 4 emails here covering a variety of subjects, so let's dive on in. The first one comes from San in Liverpool, England, and here's what she has to say. Just wanted to send you a message, Tim, to say thanks, and I think you do a really great job. I admire you a lot, love and appreciate the work and effort you put in. If it wasn't for your podcasts, my working week would be, how can I say, shit. Just love you, your voice, the way you interview. Even love it when I hear you ever so quietly take a drag of your ciggy. Or sometimes I just hear your lighter and know you're enjoying a smoke. Anyway, I don't speak to anyone about these subjects. Now and again I try, but people are so small-minded, it pisses me off pretty quick. As I know, they haven't even done a tiny bit of research, yet are ready to say it's all BS. Plus, have heard that much info gets confused myself, then it looks like I don't know what I'm talking about. Haha. I know what I mean anyway, so thanks again, Tim. You're a darling. Lots and lots of love. San, from Liverpool, England. P.S. I once wrote you before, and you read my email at the end of Nick Redfern's interview. I nearly fell off my chair at work. I'm a sewing machinist. Told one of the girls because I was so excited. She didn't appreciate the excitement I was showing. LOL. But I was made up. So thanks, hon. There you go. Thank you very much for writing in, San. Pick yourself up off the floor. I have read another one of your emails here at the end of the program. A good jumping off point on this email is probably an update on the smoking situation. I'm still working hard on trying to quit smoking. I'm going to rededicate myself soon to it. I can honestly say the intense schedule of producing these BOA audio episodes here for Season 8, because we've got back on the weekly track finally, certainly has given me less time to focus on quitting smoking. But probably following the holidays, I'm going to redouble my efforts once again, and hopefully, finally, I can once and for all kick the smoking habit. It's just disgusting and expensive and terrible for your health, and I do not recommend anyone do it, but I am addicted, so I've got to get over that and kick the habit. And it's something we've discussed here at the end of the show numerous times, so since San brought it up, I figured I would mention it. Additionally, I should give thanks, of course, for the international listeners. That's what put San's email here at the top of the list. Liverpool, England. Pretty amazing to think that right now, San is likely listening to this episode at her job in Liverpool, England, working as a sewing machinist, and creepy old Banal is reaching all the way across the Atlantic and filtering into her earbuds and talking about the world of the paranormal. It's pretty amazing, and it's humbling to think that the reach of this little program has gone so far. And before I let you go, San, I got one more point here from your email that we should talk about. That's talking to people about the subject. It's maddening sometimes. I can totally empathize with your plight. The weird part is, you know, I got the Facebook page, and I got a lot of BOA Audio listeners who are friends with me. I've kind of tried to push them over to the Banal of America Facebook page, but on the page also, I have a lot of folks that I went to high school with, a lot of folks I went to college with who are friends with me on Facebook. I think they're just bewildered by what I've been doing for the last decade or so. Sometimes they reach out to me, and usually they're interested in the subject. Thankfully, I don't have a lot of people write to me and say, "What are you gone mad?" They probably say that about me behind my back, but that's fine. I got enough people talking behind my back. Believe me, it's all good. But I can totally understand where you're coming from, San. You got to pick your battles with these folks. Don't try and change the mind of someone whose mind is already closed. Don't try and open their mind, because they're not going to have it, and you're just going to get frustrated and walk away. Have conversations with folks who are genuinely interested in the subject. If it comes up naturally, don't proselytize about this stuff. That's one of the big things I try to tell folks, one of the big things that I purposely try to avoid. I'm not going out trying to convert people into believers in the paranormal, but if the subject comes up, I'm more than happy to talk to them about this really weird world that we've devoted so many years to exploring here on the program. That pretty much covers all the points in San's email. Big thanks once again for writing in, San. Hope you enjoyed hearing your email once again at the end of the program. Next email comes from Samuel. No hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. "Greetings, Tim. Let me thank you for your amazing content and especially your podcast, which makes my 10-hour workdays something to look forward to. I just finished the available Bruce Rucks podcasts and was blown away. I have a lot of questions I would like to talk over with him, so I am seeking his email address. If you could put me in contact with him, I would greatly appreciate it. Thanks, Samuel." Thank you for writing in, Samuel. Back-to-back emails from folks who enjoy the program at their workplace. It is always a humbling message to receive from folks who are listening to BOA Audio and telling us that we help them get through their workday. Hopefully, with the conclusion of this episode, we got you through one more day. Regarding the Bruce Rucks podcasts and his email address, I can't be giving out guests' email addresses, unfortunately. Most of the guests, I'd say 95% of them, have websites or Facebook pages. Bruce is a special exception. Bruce is completely off the grid, and I think he likes it that way. So it's really not my place to be giving out that kind of information. I can forward information to Bruce. If he wants to act on it, that's fine. But I can't be giving out that kind of stuff to the BOA listeners. However, I have some great news for folks on the Bruce Rucks front. Two pieces of great news, in fact. First of all, as of this very moment, we are a mere 2 weeks away from Rucksgiving 2013. And I actually spoke to Bruce on the phone last night. He's doing really well, and he's really looking forward to this year's Rucksgiving festivities. It will be a live edition of the program, and I'm giving the hardcore BOA Audio listeners who are tuning in right now the opportunity to submit your questions for Bruce Rucks on this year's Rucksgiving. So send them off to me, and I'll put them in the pile to be submitted to Bruce Rucks in 2 weeks' time on the live Rucksgiving spectacular. That's good news number one. The other good news is that hopefully in the not too distant future, maybe in the next few weeks, maybe by the end of the year at some point, Bruce Rucks is going to be penning some new stuff for Banal of America. I've been begging him to join BOA and kind of putting it off for a very long time until we got this WordPress set up underway at Banal of America. And now, with the launch of BOA 3.0, the doors have been opened to bring Bruce Rucks into the fold As I said, I spoke to him last night. We talked about this as well. He's very excited to be doing some writing for Banal of America. It was already sort of bouncing some ideas off of me. And the good part about that is that will give Bruce a bit of an online presence, which will allow folks like Samuel and, believe me, folks, the many, many other people who have written to me trying to get in touch with Bruce Rux. Now you'll be able to just post your stuff in the comments on Bruce Rux's columns, and I'm sure he will get back to you. That way, you'll be able to reach out to Bruce, and I'll no longer have to be the middleman on these exchanges. So, two pieces of good news with regards to Bruce Rux. Stay tuned to banalofamerica.com for, hopefully any day now, the first Bruce Rux column, and in 2 weeks' time, on November 26th, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, it's Ruxgiving 2013 live. The next email comes from Nancy. No hometown listed. Here's what she has to say. I've been devouring your podcast for the past few months, and they've helped me get through a lot of hours sitting at my computer. I don't like every episode, but it's great that you cover so many aspects of the paranormal. You have a respectful, decent way of interacting with your guests that is sadly lacking in so many interview shows. I really appreciate that. Now's when the shoe drops, folks. I know you're waiting for this. Okay, so here's the sad thing. I can't listen to your BOA live broadcasts due to your foul language. I've heard you comment on this subject before, and you always end the comments by saying that people write in and tell you that they like the swearing. Well, I'm willing to bet that you're losing a lot of people like me who will just stop listening and never let you know why. You're obviously an intelligent, thoughtful person with a great sense of curiosity and adventure. I can be listening to a show and really getting into the topic, then bam, you drop the F-bomb and ruin it for me. When you don't swear yourself, the sound of it is extremely jarring, and immediately, the swearing person seems to be a few degrees less intelligent than they were a moment ago. I would not let my kids listen to your show for all the tea in China. Like I said, it makes me kinda sad. I challenge you to leave it out for a while. If you suffer too much withdrawal or your ratings go down, you can always throw it back in. I'm guessing that won't happen, and those of us with sensitive ears will be able to enjoy all your great programming without having to mentally bleep out any of the content. Thanks for listening, and keep up the great work. Nancy. Thank you very much for writing in, Nancy. Folks, Nancy actually wrote in quite a while ago. I'd say, well, obviously during the BOA Live sessions, which took place throughout August and September. And I really took to heart her email. I really gave it some serious consideration, and the more astute BOA audio listeners, the ones who really pay close attention, may have noticed that I believe so far here in Season 8, there have been no F-bombs. I have really tried to cut down on the swearing here on BOA audio. I can't guarantee that it's never going to happen, but I totally understand Nancy's point, and it kind of goes along with the evolving nature of the program. She's right. She's certainly not the first person that's written in about the swearing on the show. And I do love the freedom of speech that comes with Banal of America, that I can say the F word whenever I want, that I can say even more foul language. I love the ability and freedom to do that. But that doesn't mean that I have to do that. So I wouldn't say that I've purposely halted my language on the program, but it's kind of gotten into my mind more in the last few weeks or so about the swearing on the show. The other part of it is I really do enjoy letting the guests swear. This is sort of a free place for them to be. This is a safe place for them to talk about sometimes really outlandish stuff, sometimes really fringe material, and if they want to swear, I totally understand. I'm never going to go around bleeping the episodes. I don't believe in that kind of thing, although I think it would sound kind of neat and cool, but I'm not going to do that because that would be way too much additional work. And I'm not going to discourage the guests from swearing, because the last thing you really want to do when you have a guest on the program, as I said, this is supposed to be a safe place for them. I don't want to start throwing 300 restrictions at them. I don't even want to start throwing one restriction at them, which is the language barrier. But perhaps if they hear me using clean language, they will also adhere to that unwritten policy. And it certainly isn't a policy that is hard and fast. I can almost guarantee you there'll be guests that I'll have on the program. I'm thinking about my good friend Greg Bishop. He's somebody that once we get going on the show, we forget there's even an audience in place. And then there's a good chance there's going to be F-bombs flying left and right. That said, I'm trying to kind of avoid using the foul language. I want people to be able to listen to this with their kids. I want folks to be able to put the program on during a long car ride to grandma's house and not have to be worried about me just going off at the mouth with a bunch of F-bombs. Nancy's right about this. So, with that said, I guess just stay tuned. Keep an ear out. Let me know if you hear some foul language on the program. It may happen, as I said. It may happen time to time, but it's certainly not going to be our calling card. I don't want to be known as the program that is so filthy you can't listen to it with grandma. Although now that I said that, that sounds like a fantastic tagline. So maybe we'll go in that direction if our ratings suffer. Actually, I'm laughing about that part. Nancy, there are no ratings. We are paranormal programming on demand. So I'm not too worried about the download numbers. I don't keep an eye on that sort of thing. My focus 100% of the time is producing compelling content. If 100 people listen to it, that's great. If 1,000 people listen to it, that's even better. If 10,000 people listen to it, that's awesome. And if 1,000,000 people listen to it, hopefully I can finally make some money on this thing. But I'm not holding my breath on that. So don't worry about BOA ever kowtowing to the ratings. At the end of the day, we are focused on making compelling programming for the BOA audio listeners. And if lightning the amount of foul language on the program helps that cause, then I'm all for it. And the final email comes from Dan the Man. He says, I just want to encourage you by telling you that you are by far one of the best interviewers I have ever encountered. I have listened to 100% of your podcasts, and I wish you had the time, energy, and monetary resources to do a podcast every week. Hope to buy you a pint or two if I ever make it to Boston or you come to Chattanooga. I wish you God's greatest blessings. Thank you, Dan the Man. I'm intrigued by this Chattanooga invitation. I would like to go to Chattanooga. I bet it's an awesome place. Sounds like they're partying all the time down there just from the name Chattanooga. I will take you up on that pint, Dan, someday. Someday I will show up in Chattanooga, and I will find you, and I will force you to buy me a pint or two, it says right here on the email. So I'm actually entitled in writing to two Chattanooga pints, which I will definitely take you up on someday in the future. I don't have the date on this email, but Dan must be a little bit behind, because we've come very close to producing a podcast every week since we launched BOA Audio Season 8, and really dating all the way back to the close of BOA Audio Season 7. A lot of the time, energy, and monetary issues, which Dan mentions here, seem to have abated quite a bit as the summer came to a close. Thank goodness. And as I kind of discussed during BOA Audio Season 7, around the end of the season, I was getting increasingly frustrated with myself for not producing content on a regular basis. And really, when we launched Season 8, I wanted to rededicate myself to getting BOA Audio on the right track. If not weekly, then definitely every 10 days. Thankfully, we've actually been hitting the show on a weekly basis now for quite some time. So we haven't had any long stretches except for that one little period there at the end of October when my work schedule kept me from producing an episode. A lot of that is thanks to BOA Live, which allows me to roll out episodes much, much faster, and then in turn use the time following the live episodes to get the next taped program out to you. In fact, you're going to be listening to this one on 11, 12, 13, but it's been pretty much done since around November 9th, which is pretty amazing for us. I can't guarantee we're going to keep up this kind of pace throughout Season 8, but we have definitely gotten the rest of 2013 pretty well sketched out. So hopefully by the time 2013 comes to a close, we'll already be 13 or 14 episodes deep into Season 8, which is unbelievable when you look at the way we rolled through shows the past two seasons. Thank you very much, Dan the Man, for your kind words. Hope you have been enjoying the past few episodes since you wrote to me. And on that note, we'll close the book on BOA Audio Listener Feedback. Big thanks to Dan the Man, Nancy, Samuel, and Sam in Liverpool, England, for their contributions to BOA Audio Listener Feedback. If you'd like to be a part of future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback, here are the ways you can do so. Write to me at boaaudio@hotmail.com. Or head on over to banalofamerica.com and click the contact button. Additionally, if you want something a little more interactive, you can join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. You can also find that by clicking the forum button at Banal of America. Lots of great discussions going on there regarding BOA audio as well as the world of the paranormal and pop culture. Beyond that, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. Just punch in Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L. That'll bring up my profile. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. It's all good, and I'd be happy to have you as part of my online circle of friends. Let me see. Facebook. Oh, no! Oh, God. And finally, let me plug Banal of America on Facebook. Our numbers are wildly changing here. We're back to 1,100. I may have to stop reading the numbers here at the end of the program because the numbers keep flipping wildly. On the last edition of the program, we thanked the 1,100th like, but it looks like we have another 1,100th like. So we'll also give a shout out to Teresa Williams Montz, who is the new 1,100th like. And on that note, I will not thank anyone until we get to 1,200. So that way I don't have to worry about the numbers changing too wildly here at the end of the show. Nonetheless, if you are on Facebook and you want to get more info on Banal of America, you can always catch the latest breaking news from BOA at Banal of America on Facebook. Just punch in Banal of America and the page will pop right up. And then like us. Up next, please allow me to take a moment and thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, our webmaster, Ray Weigel, and our graphics guru, Jeremy Boston. Since the launch of BOA 3.0, slowly but surely, the band has begun getting back together. The past couple of days have seen two new columns from the BOA staff posted at BOA 3.0. Leslie has an all-new Gray Matters talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident. I may have mispronounced that, but the infamous Dyatlov Pass incident, Leslie discusses that, specifically the new book Mountain of the Dead, The Dyatlov Pass Incident by Keith McCloskey. Additionally, just posted at Banal of America a few hours ago, Richard Thomas's Room 101 returns with a column concerning the Illuminati and whether or not they're using ancient cloning techniques to continue their control over the planet. Chilling stuff from Richard Thomas. So an all-new Grey Matters and an all-new Room 101 at Banal of America right now. Head on over and check those out. And hopefully more and more of the BOA staff will be returning to the party as things get underway with BOA 3.0. Now comes the time in the program where we pass the bucket around to the BOA audio listeners and ask you to make a donation to the Banal of America franchise. How do you do that? That's simple. Head on over to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com, and click the PayPal button. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a snail mail donation, you can do that by mailing your donation to Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. You can get that complete address at Banal of America right under the PayPal button. And if you mail us a donation, please make it payable to Tim Banal and not Banal of America, because my bank is anal and they will not cash those checks. And please include some form of correspondence so I can reach out to you and thank you for your donation. As always, it bears repeating, my friends, no donation is too small and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. Much like previous taped editions of BOA Audio Season 8, it is very difficult, if not impossible, for me to tell you what will be coming on the next edition of BOA Audio. I'll be taping what looks to be a fantastic conversation tomorrow in the afternoon. That may be next week's episode. However, I'm also kind of itching to do another live edition of the program prior to the live Rux Giving, so we may actually be doing another live edition of BOA Audio on November 19th. Either way, I'm almost certain that we'll be coming at you next Tuesday, November 19th, with another edition of BOA Audio, either tomorrow's conversation or another live edition of BOA Audio. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff in the till, and there will definitely be another episode coming at you next week. Stay tuned to Banal of America and BOA on Facebook for the announcement of next week's program. Hopefully, the news on who the guest will be coming at you later on this week. And on that note, we close the book on this edition of the program. Once again, big, big thanks to Bill Guggenheim and Dr. Amy Kagan for joining us here to discuss after-death communication. Also, thanks to Dan the Man, Nancy, Samuel, and San from Liverpool, England, for writing in on BOA audio listener feedback. And finally, enormous thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA audio listeners. Every week I struggle with new ways to put you folks over. I cannot thank you enough for your support of this program. You literally are the fuel that drives the paranormal mothership that is Banal of America. Thank you for your enduring support of this program. And as always, thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.